difference between what it means to be good when you're trying to be epic. No, you don't gotta believe in me. Nothing can stop me. I already said it. I'm taking everything they stole from us. Yeah. You got your problems, I'm a whole nother. I'm giving people something to believe in. I'ma show them freedom like a bow cutter.
We gon' fight back.
Yeah. We breaking chains over here.
Yeah.
You can stay over there.
Welcome back, everyone, to It's Last Call. Last Call with the alcohol only on It Is the Blue Wire Hustle Network. And join me on the line, this man here. Well, he will once again get another crack at the apple. Years ago, he was the champ. Now he wants the title back. He'll have to go through Caleb Plant, the defending champion, to reclaim his glory, but he's willing to do it. I give you once again the pride and joy all the way from right now, St. Michael, Minnesota. I give you it's Caleb Truex. Caleb, you, Caleb Plant, January 30th, PBC on Fox. For once again, the IBF super middleweight title. How excited are you about this? To finally get, a shot at a title which you never got a rematch for.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Ever since I lost the title to James Gale in 2018, I wanted a chance at a title again. And obviously, once you get that first taste, it's always on every fighter's mind to win another one and get that be that two-time champion. So I've been hungry ever since April of 2018 to get my second crack at a title belt.
So break it down here. Caleb Plant is a guy who has fast hands. He likes to start off fast. He is a guy who's a technical boxer. How much do you feel that you have an advantage in that you faced a guy like him before? Him and James DeGale, similar styles. Both guys start off fast. Sometimes they get a bit tired because they go very hard in those first five, six rounds. How much do you feel that you have the advantage in terms of knowing what he wants to do?
I imagine he'll drop a game plan and maybe try to adjust for my style. But you said he does like to start fast. He's a technical fighter. He's got good speed, good movement, good feet. And it's something that I'm going to have to be prepared for. I'm going to have to be at my best. And I do have experience against guys that move like James Gale and Daniel Jacobs and both high level guys. So he's nothing that I haven't seen before. So I'll definitely have the experience advantage.
When you have a fight like that, when you have somebody who, as you said, it's, those first three, four rounds, they're coming hard with the jab. They're attacking. They're trying to break you down, get up to a big lead. How much is it mental for you in terms of, all right, I'm going to just keep, weather the storm, keep the pace. I'll worry about, the later rounds when it comes, because that's when I'll start making my move. That's when I'll start taking advantage that he's starting to slow down.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get behind early in any fight. I like to get off to a start. Even if I lose the first couple rounds, I like to make the guy that I'm fighting work hard and turn into more of a dogfight or a war, so that I can bank those early rounds and use the pressure that I'm mounting when the fight goes late. So even if I get off to a fast start, and wins those first couple rounds, I want to make sure that he's having to work hard to do that, so my pressure style will take its toll in the back half of the fight.
We're gonna go back to this fight in a bit. Take me to the last year. I know when we have had you on the show, there's always hope because you're going, well, this big fight's happening here. I'm ready for it. I'm prepared. And then just crap happens where it's like, okay, you're facing, Peter Quillen. And, oh, by the way, but no decision due to a cut caused by an accident, but two rounds, waste of time. Go back for the rematch. And you're going, okay, I want to do this. You get injured or, something happens, and then you're watching as Alfredo Angulo takes the fight and wins against Peter Quillen. The coronavirus hits. I mean, how much has this last 12, 13 months been just sort of, okay, God, I'm trying here. You could have caught me a break because this is starting to really piss me off.
Yeah, it's been a rough 2 years for me, actually. Some injuries, the cut, the coronavirus. But I'm fortunate to be in this spot now, and I never really get too low or too high. I'm always on an even keel. know, always looking at the positive, and thankfully the universe threw me a fastball instead of a curve, and I got into this fight for a title again, and I need to make the most out of it because I'm 37 years old and getting older, long in the tooth, and who knows how much longer I'll have left in the sport. So I want to take advantage of it while I can, and just go out there and make the most of it.
Tell us about the injuries. Okay, how many of them were just sort of nagging ones where it's like, okay, the wear and tear, and you go, okay, I can push through this fight, and then I push through the next fight, and then that next camp, all of a sudden, it's like, oh crap, you know, the elbow really, you know, I need to have the elbow drained, or you know, my back is really hurt, I gotta get surgery. I mean, how much of a lot of these injuries been just like, okay, I can push through, and then the bill comes later on?
Well, my whole career, I've been pretty fortunate and haven't been injured, pretty much injury free my whole career, other than the stuff that I'm able to work through. You know, I always have had some tendonitis in my Achilles and in my elbow, and busted up hands once in a while. But that stuff to be expected over a 13 or 14 year career in a tough sport like boxing. And I've always been able to push through all the injuries that I've had because they've been fairly minor. Just nagging, but when I had to pull out of that Quillen fight, it was because of a torn Achilles, and it took me, you know, 9 months to recover, and that was the first major injury that I've had in my entire career, in my entire life, really. And I'm fortunate now to be over it, to be healed, and back to 100%. But it was that was one that obviously, when you have a torn Achilles, it's not something that you can work through very easily, and I had to pull out of the second Quillen fight and just let it recover.
And I hate to use that word, you know, healthy, but when did you feel healthy? You know, what I mean that is, like, you could have been after that injury, you can do a long jog and not go, oh crap, I feel pain, or I feel this, you know, it's in your head because of that injury. I mean, when did you feel that you were fully recovered to the point where you didn't worry about the Achilles, you could just go on, do a hard fight, a hard, you know, gym, you know, workout, go, I'm ready, and not worry about, I'm worried about tomorrow, or it's gonna, you know, flare up again?
Yeah, that's a good question, because there's kind of two things to that, where about 6 months in, I think I was physically healthy, but I had to get over that mental hurdle of knowing that I tore my Achilles. And you know, when I'm in the ring sparring or going for a run, I'm always thinking in the back of my mind, like, shoot, you know, this doesn't feel quite right. Maybe I'll do it again. And so there was a physical hurdle to get over. That I think that took about 6 months. And about three more months after that, I kind of cleared the mental hurdle. And that was the one that was more important for me, because obviously in a sport like boxing, you have to be 100% focused, 100% mentally strong, and if you're thinking about your Achilles or any other injury when you're in that ring, somebody's throwing punches at you, it's your mind's not in the right spot.
If you're just tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we've got, it's Caleb Truex here of the PBC, as he'll be fighting once again. We're talking all things, of course, January 30th with Caleb Plant. We're talking his recovery from injuries, we're talking world titles. Take us back to the last fight. It's a mental fight, that one, David Boss Jumview, where it got dirty. I mean, he's throwing, he's holding, he's hitting behind the head, he's doing all this, you know, just small little, you know, crap, as we call it. In a fight like that, how much does that take you not to just start going, okay, screw this, I'm going to hit him right, you know, where Crown Jewels. Like, you know what, I'm going to give him a forearm, you know, I'm shiver. Because they'll do that. Guys like that try to just goad you into just a brawl.
I had to stay composed, that's for sure, because I think he landed more rabbit punches than he did regular punches in the whole fight. And I had to stay composed because I wanted to start throwing elbows in there, but that's not my style. So I just stuck to it. That was a mental hurdle.
How much did it bother you about the ref basically let that go? Especially when we've seen with, you know, Pritchard Cologne, you get hit several times behind the head. Very hard consequences. Not the good kind.
Yeah. Well, the referee did take away, I think, either one or two points in that fight. But There was plenty of them that he'd warn him for, but that's a foul that, you know, I think in this day and age when we've seen guys get hurt, seriously hurt in the ring and even pass away from their injuries in the ring, I think that's a foul that needs to be taken a little bit more seriously, and the warnings and the punishment need to be a little bit more strict than they have been in the past, just because that's a dangerous shot, man. If you punch somebody in the back of the head, it's a dangerous shot, and it was frustrating, but like I said, it's not my style to be dirty back or go crazy or anything like that, so I just roll with the punches and cleared a mental hurdle in that fight as well. You know, I wasn't at my best and mentally anyways, and it was my first fight back after having an Achilles injury, and once I got through it, I kind of gained a lot more confidence in my Achilles that it would be better.
Lots changed in this last year. As we talked about coronavirus, we're also talking about Minnesota. We're talking about George Floyd. We're talking about just a whole lot of things here. And for Minnesota, it seems the fighters have become sort of the voices of reason, the people trying to help pick this up here. How much has that changed you? Because you're no longer a fighter. You're now somebody who represents Osseo. You're now somebody who people look up to with hope, with everything going on, yeah, with, you know, problems with the economy, problems with coronavirus, problems with all this going on here. The state seems like being under siege at times. How tough is it sometimes when you have all these people in your town who look at you and go, you're giving us hope, you know, this fight coming up January 30th, we are drawing inspiration from you. We are getting hope that things will get better. Does it ever get too heavy for you at times?
No, not at all. I kind of feed off of that stuff. You know, I've been a Minnesota kid my whole life and love it here. All my fans are here and family and friends. And I feed off their energy when I'm fighting here in Minneapolis. Obviously now there's no fans in the stands, so that kind of sucks. But as far as being a community leader, I've always made a direct effort to give back to the community, whether it be through charity work or volunteer work or anything like that, just because this is where I live, this is where my kids live, this is where I want my kids to grow up. And I want to make the community the best that I can. And I'm happy to have people look to me for inspiration or whatever it be, inspiration or guidance or whatever. So I'm 100% happy and 100% willing to be that person here in my community and within the entire state of Minnesota.
I've spoken with several guys in the last couple of years, MMA fighters, boxers, they all say the same thing. There comes a point where you look and you go, I want more. And, you know, as I said, it's a sport which asks you to give up everything. Your days, you probably have to go to training camp, maybe go down to Vegas to train or go to this camp. You got to leave your kids, you know, your daughter, your wife. You are putting aside parties, giving up friends here. And you are, as I said, you're happily married. You have a young daughter here. You have your family. Is there a part of you that's looking going, maybe it's time I retire? Maybe because you could probably run for office in Osseo and win. Either there's probably a senator job or a House of Reps job. Hell, even the mayor, they'd probably vote you in as a favorite son of that state. There's, you know, you are an intelligent man. You would probably have business deals going on the side. Is there a part of you that's looking going, I'm ready for the next chapter. I'm ready to start being, you know, more father, businessman, husband, rather than just fighter, champion, competitor?
No, right now I'm 100% focused on boxing. You know, obviously my family comes first, but I have a great partner and my girlfriend Michelle, and she knows that boxing is my passion, and that's what puts food on the table. So she makes sacrifices when it's time for training camp, just like I do. And, you know, I have my daughter that's 4 and a half and actually almost 5 and my son that's 1.5 years. And we have a pretty good routine that I have in training camp where, my girlfriend does more of the work than she normally would have to do when I'm not in training camp. But we have a good routine. We have a good thing going, and it makes it easier for me, more comfortable for me when I'm at home and around my kids. You know, I don't go to training camps anymore in Las Vegas or Big Bear or anything like that. I do my training right here at home in my home gym, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to bring in sparring partners and get the work that I need here in Minnesota. So I don't have to make that sacrifice anymore as the ones I did when I was earlier in my career.
It comes down to January 30th. We've seen this story play out before. A dominant champion who's looking for major, you know, unification fights, talking that, okay, all he has to do is get by you, and somehow you decide to, well, poop in the part in the punch bowl up ahead of a champion and win a title. It's deja vu. Caleb Plant, he's talking possible unification fight with Canelo Alvarez of David Benavidez. Once again, here you are going into possible enemy territory, possibly, you know, as I said, fighting him in his backyard on PBC on Fox. How confident do you feel going into this fight? How much do you feel maybe this is basically, in a lot of ways, destiny, you know, once again, you're just revealing its head?
I feel very confident. It's a fight that I've wanted ever since he got the belt that I once held. I knew one day our paths might cross, and I've seen him fight almost all of his fights under the PBC banner that have been on television. I've seen live on TV, and I'm familiar with him. It's a fighter that I've figured I would be up against at some point in the near future. And now that's come to. And it's like you said, it's kind of reminiscent of my first title with DeGale, where he was the big favorite, and they were talking about everybody but me leading up to the fight. So I'm just gonna have to go in and play spoiler again and get the big upset.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to have on the show. It's this man here will be fighting once again January 30th, PBC on Fox. IBF super middleweight title on the line. I give you once again the golden one himself, Caleb Truex. Caleb, before I let you go, where can the fans check you out at? Where is the Twitter page, Instagram, the website? How can fans reach out to you?
Yeah, I love connecting with fans. I love going back and forth about boxing or fishing or whatever else you want to talk about on Twitter or Instagram. My handles are at GoldenCalebT on both. And you can check out my website, CalebTruax.com. I have all the updates on my training camp and everything that's going on up until the fight on my website and also on my Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter, so check me out.
Caleb Truax, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we are proud to have him on the show. We come back. We got a whole lot more here, but only on It Is Last Call. Last Call for the Alcohol, only on It Is the Blue Wire Hustle Network. Again, only on It Is Last Call on the Blue Wire Hustle Network. And join me on the line. It's been here. Well, you have probably heard of this group. It's called One Championship. They've been rising up in the Far East and doing pretty damn well. They're on TNT. This man here is part of that movement here, as he is one of the top fighters in the welterweight division. And with a lot of big guys from Sage Northcutt to Timofey Natsuyukin, Edward Folayang, but well, the sky is the limit for him this year. He wants some rematches. He wants some title shots, and he's ready to get all of that. I give you once again from Combat Brothers, fighting from the Netherlands. I give you the Archangel himself. I give you Peter Buist. Peter, let's start off here with last year. How much of the last year for you was a challenge in that you had one fight start off in January, and then you had a 10-month layoff, and during COVID, everything sort of got shut down. How much was this the most challenging year for you?
Yeah, like everyone, this one was unexpected, of course. The year started awesome for me because 4th of January, our son was born, our oldest son. So we were happy, and then 2 weeks later, then 1 week later, one called me if I would want to take the opportunity to fight Edward in 2 weeks' notice. So we said, of course, yes, and then I won that fight on decision. And then everything was awesome. Yeah, everything was in line. I was waiting for the Yuri and the Christian Lee fight, but then COVID hit and strange times, to be honest. Yeah, then after that it was 5 weeks before my last fight. It was in 6th of November was my last fight. And I had a 5 week training camp, but everything was in lockdown. So me and Rainier, who had to fight on the same day, yeah, we had a strange training camp. And yeah, we made the best of it.
How much for you, though, was how much of this for you was just par for the course? Because for those who don't know, you've had it rough. I mean, you grew up single parent, three brothers. As you said, there were times where there's not much food on the table. There's not much going on where the city was. At times, you guys are nearly homeless. How much for you was this looking going, all right, well, I've had worse. I can survive. I've gone through worse. I can survive. I've done everything else that life has thrown at me here. This is just another raindrop in the bucket.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm a God-loving guy. So, yeah, for me that means that I don't get shaken by these kind of things. I always try to adapt immediately. But, yeah, it was strange. It was very strange when it started. But, yeah, like you said, I had a rough going in my life, but for me, yeah, I see it now as some kind of training to train my endurance in fights, but also in life.
Take us to your last fight, because I've been curious about this year, and you've probably thought of it. The unanimous decision loss to Timothy Natsuyukin, and this is a guy like yourself who's been up and down here. How much do you feel that for this fight, had you fought him earlier, it would have been different. But, you know, ever since the Eddie Alvarez fight, he's been more locked in the zone because now he knows, hey, I can beat a UFC champion. I can beat anybody here. I know, when you have a fight like that, when you see a guy who's beaten somebody who was at the top of a mountain, how much do you look and go, okay, he's a different fighter because he now realizes he can beat anybody. He's now focused. He's more trained. He is now in that zone. How much do you look and go, I wish I took him on two fights before this all happened.
No, how can I say this? For me, it was the COVID really infected me, but I wasn't aware of it that it infected me. But during the lockdown in Singapore. And there was also a private thing in my life what happened. So those kind of things were in the back of my head. And yeah, those things infect me. If this fight was before the Before the lockdown, it would be different. But this was a mindset thing, this fight. That's the worst kind of loss there is. It's knowing that you could have beat him. When the fight was over, I saw on his face, he was like, whoa, what? I really did. And I was like, fuck, I wasn't mentally there. I gave it away. So next time, when I meet Timothy again, it will be different. Trust me.
Take me back to the Haoxin Wu fight, because that was back in 2016 for Kunlun. And at that point now, you're 9-3. There's probably a lot of people saying, maybe you shouldn't fight anymore. Maybe you shouldn't do this here. Maybe you should get a better job. And then it changed. You went on a 7-fight win streak. You're beating guys who are pretty good, like Sully Bull, Kota Shimoshi, Tony Caruso, Edward Foliayong. Like, what changed? Like, what made you go from winning a couple fights, losing a couple fights, to just going, all right, I'm down in the zone. I don't care what happens. I'm going to win this fight. I don't care who you throw in front of me. I'm going to win.
To be honest, it's a shame that in these times, if a fighter loses a couple of times, that they already start thinking about, what should I do with my career? So for me, every loss is a lesson. Like the last loss. If I won my last fight, I could have fought for the title. But this is a lesson. It showed me that I wasn't mentally strong enough to deal with certain situations, and it only makes me stronger. So after the fight in Kunlun, for me it was like, okay, I lost. He was the better man that day. If it was mentally or physically, I don't care. What should I do to become better? And I'm a fighter. I'm a born fighter. For me, I don't know other things to do. I have my graduations, of course, and I have a million options to do different things than fighting, but fighting is who I am. I love to do it. So for me, it's okay. It's a loss. It only motivates me even more. It only makes me stronger. It only shows me my weak points so I can work on them. If you win everything, you don't see your weak points at a certain time anymore. So you're just training. That slipped in my system a little bit. After loss, you do a lot of self-reflection. Even when I win, I do self-reflection, but it's different when you lose a fight. Then the self-reflection is very critical, because you have to find the problem in your chain. So for me, every loss is a big lesson. It only makes me stronger. Trust me, my last loss is motivating me even more. I feel I train different now, with more passion, more motivation, more seriousness. And I'm always serious, but it can always be better in every aspect of the training. So I feel now I'm more motivated. When you lose also, what you had. And the hardest lesson in life is losing something you had, and then you realize, man, I don't want to fuck this up, So that's a big thing for me, what I had from this loss, and especially also the loss in Kunlun, for example. I had the same thing. At the time I was a garbage man, and it was a good job, but it wasn't the job I wanted. And I could have done other things at the moment, but I really, really believed in myself. I still do, always, and always will do, that I'm a fighter, and that I really can be a world champion, a competitive world champion, dominant world champion, and defend the title for many years. But for me, it's not a... I always realized that my journey isn't in one straight line, only victories. Of course, the people who are unbeaten, like Rainier, I see how hard they work, but every champion has their own path. Some are undefeated, like Khabib, and some have to fall a couple of times. But at the end, they are the most strongest fighter there are in the world. So I prefer that road. It's harder, it's tougher, but it's realer. It's confronting you every time. And I know when I'm champion, and I will be this year, I know that I will be a dominant champion for a long time. Trust me. Because, like I said a couple of times already, every loss is only motivating me. What doesn't kill me really makes me stronger.
If you're just tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Peter Buist on the show. We're talking all things, of course, one championship. We're talking COVID. We're talking the struggles, wins and losses, the mentality of a fighter. Let's talk about the evolution, especially for you, with that you came from a kickboxing background. I mean, everybody who knows about the Netherlands knows it's the home of kickboxing. It, you know, Rico Van Hooven, Glory Kickboxing, even Roman guys, Baker. You know, everybody's come from there. And now with the emergence of Americans and Russians coming over into one in championship, you got to face a lot of wrestlers and they try to take you down. And it's going to be a lot of ground and pound, a lot of just mauling here. How much have you had to modify everything so that you can not only land kicks, land punches, but also defend takedowns and defend guys who, that's all they want to do, take you down and just maul you?
How long? Man, it's still in my, I'm still learning how to do those things. Because like you said, I'm from a standing background. And yeah, the first time I hit my butt on the ground with MMA and I was like, holy shit, what happened? But luckily, before I started with kickboxing, I did for around 6 or 7 years judo. And I am blue belt in judo at that time. And I was competing every weekend. I was third at the European. So I already knew how to fall and how to land and how to get up. But like you said, now we're fighting the highest levels. But luckily, I trained with Giga Musashi, with Rani Duryodhana. Rani Duryodhana is a world champion. BJJ, Giga Musashi is the best MMA fighter there is now at this time. And maybe he will definitely go in the history as one of the best. So I have Costello from Stain is also a belt fighter. Gokhan also a belt fighter. I train with Cage Warriors from France and Belgium, and I got all kind of people, world champion wrestlers, world champion BJJ. So for me, it was a quick but hard process. Trust me, especially the BJJ, the wrestling. I understand because I'm from judo. It's totally two different kind of sports. I don't want to offend somebody, but the concept is the same. You throw somebody down and pin them. So I already knew the wrestling part, but the BJJ part is for me the where I spend the most time in, to be honest.
Last question before I let you go. I know when we've looked you up and during several interviews, you've always said your biggest thing is God, that, you know, you're religious, you feel that God is, you know, talk to you. How big is it having that religious faith, especially, as you said, with everything that's going on with you, being homeless, having no money, having people say, oh, you should quit your job, you know, growing up with this tough life, having COVID. How much do you feel that for you having, you know, that religion in your life is basically the stopgap, you know, with everything that's going on, is basically the one thing that gives you just peace of mind?
It's everything for me. It's unbeatable. Even if the world ends, it's still there. So for me, it's faith is everything, you know. My whole process in life, my whole learning abilities is based on faith, you know. I really believe if you fear God, but not people, if people hear that, they think, oh, why should I fear God? But if you fear God, you have your, you know, you're humble, you're always trying to learn. It's difficult to explain. It's you have to experience it. That's why I try to be humble as possible, because I know I'm just a simple guy, you know. And religion helps me a lot with that. So I'm a Jesus guy, like you say in America. So yeah, for me, it's everything. It makes me calm. It keeps my head empty. Like in these times, you know, you hear a lot of people who commit suicide because they don't see their future bright, but if you believe in God and you search for Him, you really feel that, you know, that this is nothing. What comes after it. It doesn't mean you have to kill yourself to go to the other place, but you know, you really appreciate your time here, but you know there's a better side on the other side. So yeah, I can talk always about religion and fighting, but in a nutshell, it's like that.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, I give you, it is the Archangel himself. I give you, it's Peter Buist. Peter, before I let you go, where can the fans check you out at? Where is the Twitter page, Instagram, the website? Where can fans contact you?
For me, my Twitter is, we call it in Holland, Monkey Tail. It's at RPD /88. And Instagram is Peter Buist. It's easy. I'm the most active on Instagram.
Peter Buist, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we are proud to have him on the show. We come back, though. We got a whole lot more here, only on It Is Last Call. Last Call for the Alcohol, only on It's the Blue Wire Hustle Network. Welcome back, everyone, to It's Last Call. Once again, only on It Is the Blue Wire Hustle Network. And, well, I want to thank my wonderful guests earlier this hour. We had on Caleb Truex. He'll be fighting once again PBC on Fox January 30th against Caleb Plant for the IBF Super Middleweight title. We also had all the way from the Netherlands and one championship, Peter Buist, and we're looking forward to seeing him back in action. Hopefully soon on a one championship card. But now join me on the line, this young man here. Well, he's one of the writers for Sure Dog. And well, he's been monitoring everything, working his butt off and trying to figure out what's going on with the next fight card, who's going to win, and getting some juicy tidbits and recapping all the wackiness that's been going on in this world. I give you once again, introducing from Sure Dog itself, I give you Jason Burgo. So Jason, let's start off here with, it's a weird world. It's COVID-19. We know what happened. We know how everything changed for, some will say, a whole lot worse. You saw the Dana White video. I know he's taking credit for everything, and he's pounding his chest and all that. He's saying, oh, yeah, we did it here. What's your take on it? I mean, how did UFC do, and how much, you know, credit does Dana deserve, and how much of it is also just, well, this is more the fighters rather than him?
It's a weird thing. I mean, without a doubt, he and his entire staff, he can't do it all by himself. The fighters and everybody, they deserve a lot of credit for sure. The video, I think most of us in the media and hopefully some of the fans that are wise enough to get it was completely unnecessary. And it's the sign of the times, and that's the nature of the world we live in. These kind of, you know, like you mentioned, pounding the chest sort of situations. But I mean, they didn't do it without doing things wrong. There's clearly still things going on wrong now, but they have the luxury, and they've always had the luxury in their situation, is that they don't have like other leagues, the big four leagues, and it's a schedule. They don't have to worry about, oh, we got to play on Monday and then we got to do this all again on Wednesday. So they can get people in, you know, quarantine the hell out of them in rooms and then get them out after the fight as soon as they can before anybody tests. So they have that luxury. So they were able to get away with a lot of things, and kudos to them, kudos to the sport. And that's why, you know, early in this, I always felt MMA was the one sport that's probably fairly pandemic proof. And as we've seen, a lot of the leagues eventually got going and followed their league. So they deserve a lot of credit. They did something. It's an achievement to stay as busy and consistently busy as they were throughout 2020, but to act as if there was nothing wrong. And I've talked about this on Twitter a little bit and stuff like that, and even on podcasts, people have to think about something like long haulers. And if you haven't heard the term long haulers in relation to COVID, look it up. It's a serious thing where people that have COVID will eventually not have symptoms early and have it later. I'm thinking maybe Cody Garbrandt may be one, considering how long he's taken to recover from his COVID. We hope Khamzat Chimaev and his lung issue is not a long hauler thing. So it's something to take into account, because 2 years from now, if 10 UFC fighters aren't the same as they were and they can't compete because they were one of these people, we're going to look back and like, was it all worth it, you know?
How much more credit should the fighters get, though, in terms of, and we're going to talk with Keith Schindler about this Bellator guys, and I've talked with Vic Salazar about the boxing. This isn't baseball, basketball, football. I mean, these guys don't have private gyms, or they can't, you know, like in basketball, you can just go and work out, shoot around and be 6 feet apart. A lot of these guys, you talk to them and it's, yeah, we need the money. Our gyms mm-hmm. are shut down. Our small businesses are shut down. You know, we're working out of gyms. You heard of the Brandon Calton stories or even Mary Renault stories of, yeah, we would literally just try to find somebody's garage we could work out of, or we'd try to get a run in and, you know, have to wear, you know, avoid certain places. I mean, how much credit should they get for literally, as they say in the military, you adapt, you know, adapt and survive. Keep going, you know, 1 foot forward, keep on moving. I mean, they literally had to change everything and sacrifice what little they have.
I think that it's an excellent point. And honestly, and maybe the point should start here, maybe, you know, it's on the media, it's our fault. Really, the fighters should get all of the credit, because this isn't, like you said, the big leagues. This isn't something where it's the other big leagues, they're unionized. They all collectively bargained to restart those seasons and everything like that based on their unions. These fighters are taking all the risk. Does the UFC deserve a lot of credit? Of course, because they're still fronting the money. They're still putting these shows on. They're still paying these fighters. They're still going to take the hit in terms of the bad PR, but the fighters are taking the risk. They're the ones that have to perform under these conditions, not train to the levels they want to, train in pod system. I was talking to Demetrius Johnson. Like, he's in Washington, they're in quarantine shutdowns, I think, until from like, it was just like November into early January. He's preparing for a title fight, not to the level anywhere near he wanted to, coming off of a 16-month hiatus. You know, they're taking a lot of risks. The fighters are risking themselves in these times, and they're getting fights probably not under optimal opportunities. And if they lose fights, they get released. They might be a part of those 60 fighters that are going to get released. And it's unfortunate. And a perfect example is anybody from Combate Americas did not compete at all for the most part in 2020. PFL, all those fighters lost an entire season worth of paydays. Even the millionaires, they're still losing money. They could have made a few $100,000 at least this year. So the fighters deserve a lot of credit for trying to still put on fights and trying to get it done and putting their careers and future value at risk by competing under such situations.
Let's talk about the fights in general. As we said, it was weird because you had Fight Islands, you had a lot of cards, which were being in different, you know, scenarios. Fighters sometimes had to fight on short notice here. Give me the positives of what that came out this year. I mean, from everything that happened at USC, give me some things you liked that about either the sport, about the fighters, or about guys who decided to literally, you know, elevate their game this year.
I would say the positive, the word that comes to my mind is opportunities, because a lot of young fighters, maybe not named fighters, because for the most part, this is a weird year in terms of like when we're doing the Sherdogs year in. Staff awards, fighter of the year. This wasn't like a jam-packed named fighter of the year, because a lot of the top fighters, the big money makers, probably fought once or maybe none all year. This was a great, if you were an LFA fighter, if you were an LFA title contender or champion, this was a great year for you. You got a lot of opportunities to jump into the UFC quickly, stay active. If you were a young fighter on the way up, not making much and you know, not worried about, I'm COVID and I have to train and I have a family at home and all those kind of things. You got a ton of opportunities. A lot of fighters with 3, 4, 5 fights this year. Not something that was common in 2019, 2018 for a lot of fighters. I mean, I've talked to a lot of UFC fighters and Bellator too. You know, they always talk about you. It's surprising, but not everyone has an easy time getting fights. That's not the common thing. So for younger fighters, for the more affordable fighters for the UFC, and they benefited in that way greatly, they had a lot of opportunities. You know, Kevin Holland got a lot of fights. Hamza got a lot of fights. A guy that kind of still blows my mind that flew on the radar. Brandon Royval wasn't even in the UFC to start the year. Gets like, I think, 4 fights. He's a top 5 in the flyweights. You know, great opportunities. There was a lot of guys like a Brandon Moreno that became a star, a bigger name because of opportunity. Davison Figueiredo, the flyweight division, not a marquee division for the UFC, got a great opportunity because they're not money makers. They're not the huge on the salary, and they got a lot of opportunities. Davison Figueiredo has become a household name where maybe in a normal year he might not have.
Let's talk about the flyweights. We keep eliminating them, and I get it. Look, it's tough for the average fan to look and go, I could probably beat this guy. I played high school football, and this guy's 5'5", 125 pounds. But with how much with every all the fights we saw, and especially as we said, Davison Figueiredo, Brandon Moreno, Brandon Royval. Even lesser guys here, like Sergio Pettis, who was fighting then, or, you know, Joseph Benavidez. I mean, how much of this division, despite the fact that we've tried to kill it more times than Dracula, you know, survive and flourish because these guys, every day, they had a fight. Well, we're going to bring it. We're going to have a fight of a night. Damn it. You know what? We don't care what you think of us. We can hang with the best of them.
And I love it. That's probably one of the lasting stories, at least for me, from 2020 in MMA and UFC. Like, it feels like flyweight came back a little bit because, unfortunately, flyweight is something that's only in a few of the major promotions. There is no flyweight in PFL. There is no flyweight men's in Bellator. We don't have it in some of these others, mainly ONE and the UFC. And the UFC has done, or at least more Dana White, has done everything to crap on the division, even when it had the best fighter on the planet in it. So to see it come back naturally, organically, again, going back to opportunity, it got showcased 2 straight pay-per-views, flyweight titles were on the line in the main event. Like, and it's there's so many fighters that are easy to like in the division. Davison Figueiredo, as weird as he is and odd as he is, he's easy to like. He's a power-punching kind of don't-give-a-damn kind of fighter. Brandon Moreno, salt of the earth, great story, great guy. Brandon Royval, absolute wild man fighter, exciting. You got Benavidez. You got Alex Perez, a good fighter. Kai Car France, Tim Elliott, Tyson Nam coming up. There's maybe not names, but there's such good talent and so many interesting style matchups to come in 2021 with a champion who's an exciting champion, a finisher of a champion. But as Brandon Moreno showed, he's not invincible. So it just adds the intrigue. He's not a Shevchenko or John Jones or some of the names like, how quickly is this person going to lose? It's about, man, is this the person that maybe knocked Davison off? And let's not forget, Cody Garbrandt's another option and to star stud it up. Maybe we'll get a little bit more of that. Maybe some other bantamweights will drop down or additions from other companies. So I love that flyweight has really had a bit of a rebirth and has so much potential going forward in UFC.
If you're just tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Jason Burgos here on the show. We're talking all things, of course, UFC. We're talking end of year recap. I want to talk about one guy here who made a name for himself. And yet, you know, we started off with thinking, okay, you know, one fight, there's still little things he needs to work on. That's Israel Adesanya. He won. I mean, he's a champion. He's going in there with a unification fight. How much, though, did this year also show some of the things that, you know, we look and go, it's still MMA. They still got to clean it up. I mean, and I say this with him, the Costa fight. He wins, and then he dry humps Costa. He's throwing, you know, sexual slurs at the cornermen. The Romero fight where it's ugly, and he starts attacking people. I mean, how much do we look at, you know, sometimes the UFC and go, God, some of these guys need to be polished. There's got to be somebody around them who can, like, mentor them or explain, you got to behave. You really have to show better behavior than what you are.
You're 1,000% correct. But in the end, I don't blame the fighters. It'll sound crazy to say. I blame the fans because this is not a new thing. This has been, you know, you have a great knowledge of boxing. This has been a boxing thing. This kind of attitude, this kind of bravado, this kind of nature of personality since for 60, 70, 80, 100 years in that sport. It's happened in UFC. I mean, would I prefer a champion that is not only an amazing talent, world-class, a generational talent, as well as a good human being? Of course, GSP was that. Demetrius Johnson was that. Stipe Miocic is that. But that doesn't, unfortunately, appeal to a lot of hype fans. And that's more of a thing you see in other big sports. People like the goody-goody, the Tom Brady, the Peyton Manning, the Eli Manning, you know, those kind of things more so. But when it comes to fight sports, people want Arnold Schwarzenegger. They want Stallone. They want somebody that's going to blow you away and then have a line afterwards. That's just the nature of the game. So if that wasn't what fight fans wanted, fighters would easily clean it up. But people eat it up and want it and will pay for it. So fighters will go to that direction. Chael Sonnen really opened up the door. MMA, Colby Covington kicked it. I mean, Conor kicked it in. Colby Covington took another level. So I have more fear for what's to come next. You know, but as long as these guys aren't necessarily getting into major trouble outside or convictions, then it probably won't change. But even then, Mike Tyson went to jail for rape, and he's like an American darling now. It's the unfortunate thing about fight sports. I would love it, but GSP, Demetrius, even John Jones. John Jones seems to be more interesting now because he's playing up to his jerk nature. You know, Daniel Cormier got more interesting because he started talking trash. It's the nature of fight sports, unfortunately, and it's not going to change. I just hope it doesn't go too far.
We also, you see, all of a sudden now they're starting to lose guys. And some of it was COVID-related. It was, I think, Khabib Nurmagomedov. Some of it retirements, Daniel Cormier. We know that, you know, they're releasing guys here. How dangerous is that right now when you look and go, they still need to sell these cards. They still need to do pay-per-view. And as much as we talk about with Deiveson Figueroa, Israel Adesanya, they're not stars yet. I mean, these aren't guys that you can, you know, walk around, you know, in Midwestern America and drop their name and go, oh, yeah, I know that guy here. How much are they in a bind of it? They're trying to cut salaries, and yet those Junior Dos Santos right now still have value because they're a name. I mean, you know, especially with no Anderson Silva, no Cormier, no, you know, Khabib. It's every name you have that can sell, you can't get rid of them because they still can sell a ESPN On Plus card or a UFC Fight Night card.
I think that there's something to that, but the nature of entertainment and fighting entertainment, sports and entertainment, that level has changed so much. I look at the UFC sort of like the New England Patriots in a way. Like the New England Patriots will release a really good player and you go, wow, why would they release him? That's crazy. He's going to go somewhere else and be great. Or even a head coach or assistant coach, something like that, will go somewhere else and be great. Like, and then they go there and it's not the same. Like the Belichick and his team know, okay, we've gone as far. This person's probably maxed out. We can move on. I feel the UFC understands that they are privy to metrics and numbers we don't see in terms of ratings and buys and all these kind of things. And just the nature of that kind of stuff has changed. Ratings on TV aren't quite the same. You see shows that are maybe getting 2 million, a million ratings per week, and they're lasting on TV for years. Like there's so much diversity in content. It's not quite the same. So pay-per-view numbers, ticket sales are different because in the end, the UFC has their TV deal. They have their ESPN deal locked in for years. They're going to make their money off of it. Of course, they want to have strong numbers for that next TV contract when that next negotiation comes around, but they're not afraid of moving around. They've moved around from Spike to Fox to ESPN. They'll probably move around again. So I trust them. And in the end, I like it. If those guys leave and they go to help Bellator, they go to PFL is looking, all of a sudden PFL looks really interesting this season, despite coming off of losing a season, they look really interesting. So I kind of like it. You know, I like the change, the switching around, people moving around, strengthening the rest of the sport. It's an interesting thing. And the brand for the UFC, I think, is fairly bulletproof. They have their next generation of superstars. They have their Peter Yans and Figueiredos and Volkanovskis and so on, Usmans. They'll be fine if they let the older guard pass on to build the new guard.
Going forward here, as we said, it's 2021. We've always said this about the UFC. They can do more in marketing their fighters. And it's you call them the pages. I call them more like WWE. The UFC looks at it as the brand name is what it sells. Mm-hmm. All the fighters, they can go, spit for all they care. But you do need stars. And all of a sudden, you're looking around, and heavyweight is getting pretty damn old of it, too. The light, all these guys, even guys over at, you look at even lightweight, welterweight, they're starting to get old of a tooth here. How big is it for them to start finding ways to market and start promoting these guys who traditionally they don't? I mean, as I said, they let the fight speak for themselves, but with everything in special COVID and with Netflix and with Amazon, how big is it for them to find ways to market, that next big guy, whether it's Will Z, whether it's a guy like Jair Rosenstruik or Cyril Gagne or Deveson Figueiredo? I mean, how big is it for them to start going, okay, we got to start marketing the fighters better?
I mean, it's an excellent point, but I tell you, this is a conversation we've kind of been having about the UFC 10 plus years now. That's a weird thing for the UFC, and I'm guessing it's a strategic thing because that's always seems like an area where, damn, the UFC should promote these people more. They should market it. Demetrius Johnson should be marketing more. And that's an area they slip. And if for us in the media that have dealt with, say, Bellator, ONE Championship, PFL, they work hard to not just the managers of the fighters, the promotion themselves to promote their talent. They understand there's value in that. But the UFC, and maybe just it's Dana White's versus attitude and his issues with the media, maybe he doesn't want to help the media in certain ways, or maybe the strategy from within the company is just make the brand strong, promote the brand. And if we lose fighters, it doesn't matter if the brand is strong, because they really should. The fact that the UFC themselves doesn't look to seek out media opportunities for their fighters, and the managers have to do it. And luckily we work in an industry where the fighters are far more accessible than the big sports, stuff like that. But that's always a weird thing. And they really should. It would help the brand without a doubt. It would help their money making. But I wonder if that's the defense mechanism. Of Dana White, maybe he's always scared someone may leave or someone may jump ship and free agency stronger. So, you know what? I don't want to make them too great. And I want to keep him because he's willing to blow up somebody one week and then shoot him down 3 months later. It's a weird dynamic he has with promotion of the talent specifically. Should they do it? Hell yeah. They should have been doing it long ago. Will they start doing it? I don't know. They'll love Israel Adesanya for the next 3 years, and then all of a sudden they'll get cold on him. It's just the weirdness of Dana White and the promotion itself.
Last question, we'll let you go. Give me three fights you want to submit UFC has to make in 2021. You're in charge. You've taken over the reins of Mick Maynard and all those guys, and you're putting the cards together. Give me three fights you look and go, these fights have to be made. I don't care what happens. These are fights that, not just the fans want to see them, but the fighters have earned these fights in terms of they deserve this title shot, or this guy deserves this fight. Give me some fights.
It's a tough one. I mean, I probably need more time to think about it. I think for sure, if Conor beats Poirier, I think Conor McGregor and Gaethje is a fight that should happen. It's the blending of the most popular fighter in the sport in Conor or mainstream popularity with maybe the most MMA fan base popular guy in Gaethje. That's a fight that I think has to happen, even though I think Conor probably does well against him. It's an interesting fight. I would love to see it happen. If John Jones maybe wins one or two at heavyweight, John Jones in a heavyweight title fight, be it if most likely with the Stipe Miocic, is a fight I think definitely has to happen on a lot of just fan interest level and just on a historic level is a fight that has to happen. And just on a personal level, a fight that I hope happens, there's been a lot of it seems like change of direction, or maybe it's just UFC strong arming. But I personally want to see Weili Zhang versus Rose Namajunas. That, I think on paper, that's a fantastic fight, exciting fight. Want to see Rose get another title shot against arguably one of the best pound for pound female fighters on a planet. I mean, those are two or three that really interesting, and they have fan interest, some mainstream interest level, and just a story historic level are far, you know, got to happen in 2021.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, I give you all the way from SureDog itself. I give you it's Jason Burgos. Jason, before I let you go, where can the fans check you out? Where is the Twitter page, Instagram, the website? Where can fans contact you?
You can always find me on Twitter or Instagram with the same name, Cheap Seats Chat. You can find my YouTube page, but most of my YouTube video content is on SureDog.com. And there's two places. Shout out at me. I'm always willing to answer.
Jason Burgos, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we're proud to have him on the show, but we got to wrap this up. So once again, for my wonderful guests we had earlier, for Peter Beist, for, of course, Caleb Truex, and also for Jason here, this is Chris Constantine. Have a great weekend, everyone. I'm out of here. Stay tuned Monday. We're going to start Wednesday. We're going to be back with a lot more action. But stay tuned for more great action, more shows only on It Is Last Call on the Blue Wire Hustle Network.